I don't know how many times, I don't know what it means to hit it three times versus two, or so if I'm offending anybody, I don't mean to be. We're moving through the President's Report, and now we are on President's Report 10C1.
Thank you, Chair Butler. 10C1 is actually an action item, and this is a collective bargaining agreement. This is for with the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees representing our University Health Services. I know the board has considered this, and I would move for approval.
Move.
All right, we have a motion by Trustee Bowie and a second by Trustee Strauss. Is there any discussion on this action item? Seeing that there is no discussion, all those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposition? Seeing none, the motion is passed. The contract is approved.
Thank you. The next item is an enrollment report. This is something obviously critical to us being able to fulfill our mission and help the state move forward, as well as us helping to balance the budget and move the institution forward. We've asked Vice President Eric Weldy to come forward and make that presentation. Eric.
Thank you very much. What I'll do is, I don't have very many slides. As you are all aware, numbers went out recently in regards to where we are with enrollment, but I'll focus on a few highlights and address any questions that you may have. Some of the things that I'm going to briefly talk about is trends and changing demographics to give you an understanding of what we're going up against from the standpoint of recruitment. Also, I will share some new freshman academic profile as it relates to our students coming in this year. And then I'll share a few highlights in regards to the enrollment numbers, and then discuss a little bit about enrollment management strategy. I know that President Baker had focused on a few of those things, and I just want to have an opportunity to share a bit more with you. In regards to trends and changing demographics, one of the things that we're going up against, it's very competitive, as you know, in regards to recruitment of students. There are smaller student cohorts graduating from high school, and which means that there's not as many students to go around as there has been in the past. And so I'm sure that many of us are quite aware of this. There is increased competition from for-profits and out-of-state institutions. We are in a very unique situation as it relates to our location. I think we are in a wonderful location as it relates to recruiting students, not just from the Chicago area and suburbs, but also surrounding states as well. And I think this is a very popular area from the standpoint of going to school, and also from the standpoint of recruiting. But there is increased competition, and because the pool in which we have to recruit from is smaller, that means that other institutions are branching out. And so there was a time when maybe we could kind of take it for granted that students from certain areas were going to come to NIU. That's not necessarily the case now. Some other things is that we're finding is changing behaviors of prospective students. I don't know about you, but many years ago when I applied for college, I applied to one or two schools. Students today, they will apply to four or five schools. Not only that, even if you get them on campus to attend orientation, there is no guarantee that they're going to register for classes when they're on campus during orientation. And even if they register for classes, there is no guarantee that they are going to be on campus once classes start in the fall. And so these are things that we are competing against. And so from the standpoint of the relationship that you build with students and the communication that you have with students, you pretty much have to how should I say, you pretty much have to continue with the marketing, the communication, the recruitment of those students up until the time that they sit in the classroom. Changing communication strategies. Other things that we've noticed is institutions are getting quite creative as it relates to how they communicate with students, the use of technology and things like that. And so those are things that in which institutions really have to be on their game and really have to be creative. Next slide, please. Wanted to show in regards to a new freshman academic profile. Over the past few years, at least since 2011, we have had slight increases as it relates to the percentage of our new freshmen graduating in the top 10% of their high school graduating class and the top 25% and top 50%. The good news is that we have those percentages have been increasing for us. In 2011, 8.9% of the new freshmen class that was admitted and enrolled at NIU, 8.9% graduated in the top 10% of their high school class. And so you have seen a gradual increase since 2011. And the same from the standpoint of those in the top 25%. In 2011, 29.4% of new freshmen at NIU graduated in the top 25% of their high school class. Next slide, please. Also, wanted to share as it relates to mean or average high school GPA, as well as mean ACT composite score the past couple of years as it relates to our NIU new freshmen. One of the things I just want to remind you, for those who don't know, ACT composite score has to do with the average score a student receives on the ACT in the area of English, math, reading, and science. And so we've remained steady as it relates to GPA and ACT scores of our students. Next slide, please. You are quite familiar with the numbers that we shared as it relates to our new freshmen, new transfer numbers this year, but I just want to highlight a few things that you may not have read either through the media or heard. In regards to new freshmen, and looking at race and ethnicity, since fall 2011, admitted new freshmen, black students, we've had an increase of 12.7%. As it relates to Hispanic and Latino students, since fall 2011, we've had an increase of 6.9%. Our enrollment of Asian students has remained steady, while our enrollment of white students, new freshmen, has declined 4.8% since 2011. And this kind of shows you the changing demographics as it relates to recruitment of students, increase of black, Latino students, steady numbers in regards to Asian students. So this will allow us to really take a look at, from the standpoint of recruitment, where we want to recruit, and just the changing demographics. You see it within society overall, but it's really starting to show as it relates to recruitment. Next slide. Also wanted to just kind of pull out some interesting some numbers in regards to our total student enrollment. While we have had a slight decrease since fall 2012 in comparison to fall 2013 as it relates to total enrollment, during that time, enrollment of black students has decreased overall for us 1.9%, so roughly about 57 students. For Asian students, since fall 2012, enrollment for Asian students has declined 3.5%, roughly about 37 students, and white students 6.8%, roughly about 946. The interesting thing is that there was an increase in just a year as it relates to Hispanic or Latino students. of 6%, roughly 135 students. And depending on what state you live in and the demographics, the increase of Hispanic or Latino students is definitely the average is much more in regards to the increase. Next slide, please. Also wanted to share once again just a total undergraduate graduate enrollment for us. We had a decline of 3.3%, 731 students. Roughly about over a 10-11 week period, we were hovering behind as it relates to our enrollment heading for this year in comparison to last year, around 700 to 900 students, depending. One thing that we did know, because of our retention issue, that we pretty much had to enroll about 800 plus students this year in order to break even. Yeah, 800. Now I just kind of, you know, the numbers are what they are, and you pretty much can't, you pretty much, how should I say this? They are what they are, and you pretty much have to look at what you have, where you are, be realistic. And so what I have done during my past two and a half months here is have an opportunity to really look at our operation, what we're doing, what kind of strategies have we had in the past as it relates to increasing enrollment. And one thing that I'm excited about being here is that I not only have the opportunity, and it is a wonderful opportunity, to address the enrollment issue here, but also to collaborate with Academic Affairs as it relates to addressing the retention issue. So no matter how many students we recruit, if we aren't able to retain those students, it's sort of like filling a glass filled with water and putting a hole at the bottom. And so as quickly as we get them in, they're leaving. And so that's the reality of the situation. But like I said, I think we have a wonderful opportunity here. We're in a great location. And I believe that we have the talent, and we also have the skill and the resources to get to where we need to be. I believe that you've already had the last update that you had as it relates to recruitment or enrollment. There was mention of Noel Levitz coming in, a consultant coming in. And these are some of the areas in which Noel Levitz is working. They were here the past couple of weeks looking at our undergraduate and graduate operations. President Baker and I had a discussion and in regards to the retention issue, and we knew that while we're looking at enrollment, we also have to look at retention and address it at the same time. So there is a strong sense of urgency. And so one of the things that we decided to do is to go back, speak with Noel Levitz, and have them look at some retention things for us. Yes, question.
Let me interrupt a moment before I forget to go on. The enrollment overall number is down.
Yes.
The freshman class is up slightly.
Yes, that's correct.
Where are we losing them, freshman, junior?
Where are we losing our students?
Yeah.
In regards to total enrollment, our retention rate last year from freshman the sophomore year was roughly about 70%. And so that was 2011 to 2012.
From one level to the next level.
Yes, precisely.
We lost 30%.
Yes, we lost 30%. From 2012 to 2013, it's down to 66.1%, our retention rate.
Do we know what are the reasons?
There are a number of reasons. One reason is financial reasons. We're recruiting students who are heavily need-based in regards to financial aid, needing assistance. And a lot of that has to do with first-generation students. There are a lot more first-generation students coming in with heavy financial need. That's one reason. Other reasons, for some of them, it's on the academic side, and these are some of the things that I believe the provost can speak on, and I've been working a bit more with his people because they've done a great job in collecting data and information. But we also have a problem or issue with students who are leaving that are in good academic standing. And so the reasons that they are leaving, I can't identify one specific issue. It could be from the standpoint of just really NIU not being their number one choice, and maybe other opportunities coming up for them. It could be that for some students, they'll be here a year or two, or for example, they'll be here a year and then they'll go to community college and finish out part of their education before moving on to another institution. A lot of that has to do with affordability.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Yes.
When we talk, it's interesting when you make mention of the term affordability, though. Mm-hmm. One would have thought that that was really more of an asset that we had, mm-hmm. especially in light of private universities mm-hmm. and for-profit universities being so dominant in the marketplace mm-hmm. and the disparity in terms of what mm-hmm. they're charging.
Yeah.
I would have thought that, and could you speak to that, mm-hmm. rather than it being a detriment in terms yeah. of cost, mm-hmm. I would have thought that the affordability of NIU might be one yeah. of our greater assets.
Yeah, well, it depends on how you look at it. For example, scholarships. We offer more 1 and 2 year scholarships, merit-based scholarships to our students versus 4 year scholarships. Our competitors, Illinois State, Southern Illinois, University of Illinois, whoever, the majority of their scholarships are 4 year scholarships. So we recruit a student, a top student, and they come in and we offer them a 2 year scholarship. And let's say they're heavy, need-based. And so they're here 2 years, and they're in good academic standing. And after 2 years, they need added support. And we don't have the added funds in order to keep them through to graduation. And so they up and they leave. And so one of the things that that I'm looking at is working with Ann Hardy with our scholarship office is looking at our scholarship structure and changing it. Noel Levitz will give us some good data or information on that, but that's one of the challenges. Another thing, too, is that many people may not realize, for example, it's really expensive for our students to live on campus in housing, depending on the residence hall. And so some of our competitors, their housing costs are much lower. And so I think that we need to think of ways of how we can pass on savings to our students so that they're more inclined to stay on campus. And so, I mean, I think the renovations that we have done have been absolutely wonderful. But at the same time, those newly renovated residence halls are a bit more expensive than some of our other residence halls. And so these are some of the issues that we're dealing with. Yes.
I just, Trustee Strauss has a question, but can I propose a way for us to make the maximum use of the limited available time that we have remaining,
yes.
which is not your fault at all. You're a very mm-hmm. economic speaker, and I thank you for that. Let us do something, and that is make a determination that we're going to continue this discussion in academic affairs, student affairs, and personnel
Wonderful.
In November. But your answers to questions are very useful to us, so let's see if we can continue to do that. Trustee Strauss?
I wanted to ask some about the what happened that we can't do anything about for this year to make sure that I understand the exact condition that we're in. And I understand you may not be armed with answers to these questions now, and we can get them at a future date. The headcount is interesting, but it's not as important to me as the credit hour registration, because most of our revenue is based off of credit hours and not headcount. And it's also important then to know how many people are residing in our residence halls and how many are not. And I would like to see that data back, say, 5 years, to be able to judge what's happening with regard to credit hour and the trend for revenue and how many people we have in our residence halls and what has happened over that period of time. And then I'm also interested in whether we have areas that are capacity constrained or the areas in which we had the biggest misses, because you could have reached these numbers for headcount, but still have have programs where you could have admitted more, but you don't have the appropriate facilities, or you could also have areas where you're not anywhere near meeting your target, and I think these will have an influence on how it is that you design a marketing program. Yeah. And what sort of support you're going to need from us to be able to either make use of facilities or provide additional ones.
Yeah.
And then one other comment as well. I'm glad to hear that retention can't be separated from attraction. I believe that that's vitally important. And you may have only gotten as far as talking about the economic factors, but I think on the board we're aware that there are other factors at play too. And they include things that relate to the quality of life on campus, in the adjacent community, perceptions about public safety, and other things. And my concern is simply that we have some ability within our structure to be able to identify what those major challenges are and to focus our effort at removing the roadblocks to being able to retain our students of whatever sort it turns out that they are. So I hope that we're being proactive and being able to identify what those most important factors are and then designing strategies to be able to deal with them.
Yeah, we're definitely being proactive, particularly at the retention level or addressing retention. I know that I'm involved with a number of projects as it relates to retention, collaborating with academic affairs. For example, one of the things that we're going to do is hold a retention summit campus-wide to develop a retention plan or retention strategic plan. And in order to implement things, not waiting for a year or 2 years down the line, but beginning this year. And so there is a strong sense of urgency. For example, over the next 3 to 4 months, we will basically be recruiting for our fall 2014 class. And so we can't wait to see, what's going to happen and do, wait, 6 months, 7 months, 8 months in regards to addressing the issue. You know, there needs to be a sense of urgency. And I think the key for us is how do we communicate that to the campus community as it relates to the sense of urgency and looking at these issues. And so, there is a lot, I believe, on everyone's plate. But one of the things I'm excited about is that there is such collaboration across the board from the standpoint of people saying, okay, this is the issue. And at least for those of us on the president's cabinet, I see the sense of urgency. People are working, early mornings, late nights, from the standpoint of moving forward. And so anytime I get an email from President Baker, or if I get a phone call, I know that there's something else. He's come up with another idea that we can move forward on. And so, and I told my staff, I said, hey, no sleep for anyone this year. All hands on deck. And so I'm really excited about that. And so I have an opportunity to work with alumni relations, academic affairs, and other areas. So a lot to be done, but I'm excited about the opportunity.
Trustee Marshall.
I won't ask for an answer at this point, but I would like to see in one of the future presentations, hopefully not too far away, the community college aspect of it, strategies, et cetera.
Yeah. I'm working with academic affairs to look at our transfer student community college efforts. In fact, had a meeting last week from the standpoint of identifying what are the issues for us as it relates to developing articulation agreements, as it relates to really enhancing our relationship with community colleges. For example, one thing that we're doing is having a community college game days during our home football games, inviting community college students to NIU to have an opportunity to visit campus. There are a couple of community colleges that President Baker has actually met with their presidents, and we are setting up to have busloads of those students, faculty, and staff staff from those institutions come to our homecoming game, have an admissions tour, and so forth. So there are things in the pipeline from the standpoint of the transfer and community college issue for us.
Trustee Muir.
A quick follow-up on that, and correct me, you know, if I'm wrong on this, but it was always my perception that the junior-senior year is a more expensive year for a university to provide from a teaching capacity than a freshman-sophomore. Pretty fair?
Pretty fair.
Okay. Given that as the hypothesis, that's pretty fair. Should we also, though, be cautious to maintain a balance of needing to really admit freshmen and sophomores and looking at the community college in more of a supplemental way, in that if it does become the norm, if it were to, let me put it this way, if it were to become a norm, I think we might have to change our strategy, because if we had more students going somewhere else for freshman, sophomore year, mm-hmm. coming to the university for junior, senior year, would it then take a modification of our strategies then?
Yeah, I think that we really have to take a look at, you know, you can say we want 24, 25,000 students or whatever in regards to enrollment, but we need to be really specific in regards to where those students are coming from, and that was mentioned earlier. And so we have to look at enrollment targets. We have to look at what programs do we feel that we're going to have more success in enrolling students. So we have some academic programs that are doing an excellent job from the standpoint of attracting students, but we don't necessarily have the room or the facilities to hold those students. You're right from the standpoint of what you're saying. One thing that I'm excited about is because I don't believe that we've really sat down and made some of these hard decisions from the standpoint of what areas are we going to support financially in order to move forward. So you can identify numbers of where you would like to be, but until you lay out a plan for that and until you create enrollment targets, you are not going to get there. And so we have some tough decisions to make.
When will we see that?
I would say before the year is over with. ASAP. Like I said, there's no time to wait around in order for us to move forward because our competition is getting tougher and tougher.
So if you don't mind, I'm sorry, Chair. If you don't mind, do we know the areas or the colleges that we're having constraint issues? Results in us losing
students. For example, I think a college that has great potential, health and human sciences, wonderful opportunities there. If we have the facilities for them to bring in the numbers, they can bring in the numbers without a doubt. Another college that has been doing exceptional is a College of Engineering. Absolutely exceptional opportunities there. There are programs that I believe where we can identify, say, yes, this is a great opportunity for us.
Yeah, and so, Dr. Baker, I know we talked about identifying constraint areas, right, and then trying to align our recruitment strategy with our investments and with our budget dollars and that kind of stuff. Should we anticipate that this is going to happen, where we can actually see those areas, see how much investment, what it's going to take to grow some of those colleges, and then possibly even find out where we're going to get the money from to support that kind of growth? Is that where we're headed?
That's exactly right. And that's why when I mentioned in my discussion of things in front of us, the need for a budget and a budget model with budget hearings and allocations of resources to priority areas. And I think Eric's identified two of the obvious places where we may need to invest. Health and Human Sciences turned away students this year because they were at capacity. At the same time, we're declining enrollment. I think I can connect the dots. Mm-hmm. Now, we need to look at cost of goods sold and all those kinds of things. Health and Human Sciences is limited by space, which will take some money, capital money. And you note that our top capital priorities in that area.
It'll take clinical spaces, clinical locations for the students to do their clinical work. We're limited on that now, so we need to look out beyond it. It's one of the reasons I visited Malcolm X College. They're building a $215 million building. They break ground next month, and they appear willing to offer us space in that building to do some of our work. So I think that's a real opportunity there if we didn't do it on this campus. We also have three branch campuses where we have space. We have closed facilities on this campus that could be repurposed with some capital money. So we have clinical spaces outside, internal spaces, and then faculty limits due to accreditation limitations. So it'll take some money to do it, but that's why we need a budget and be able to put the revenues next to the expenses and see if it pencils. And I'm confident it will, actually, in that case.
So we talked about it. Thanks for the information, by the way. First of all, I want to say this is really, really important to the institution and to the future of our institution. And so hats off to you for taking on this role and tackling it for us. And we know there's a lot of heavy lifting that needs to be done here. But it's just not, the burden is just not with your area, but it's with all aspects of the institution. We kind of brushed over the graduation rate and which probably ties into the retention as well, but we've got to figure out losing a third of our students every year. That's it makes me wonder what's our mission, right? Maybe we've got to reevaluate that if we're going to lose a third. I don't know what other institutions are doing, but a third seems like quite a bit of churn. And we've got to figure out how do we stop that. And so plugging the glass, I think, is the right thing and something that we need to look into. It probably costs us more to go out, recruit, and bring in a student and retaining the student that we already have on board. My hope is that this is a full court press by the institution to try to tackle this measure, and we're going to need the cooperation and support of everyone to pull that off, and including improving our graduation rate. Yeah.
I think one of the key issues for us is providing adequate facilities and services for our students. Because this generation of students is quite different than any other generation. If they are not happy with where they are, it doesn't matter if it's college or a job, they will up and leave. I'm being frank. They will up and leave. I have three nephews that are in their 20s, and I have watched them grow up. And if they're not satisfied or happy, they may not even let you know. They're up and gone. So.
Eric, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Let me apologize for not giving you the amount of time that you needed to do your presentation, but what we're going to do is we're going to fashion this into something for academic affairs, student affairs, and personnel. Let me ask our board liaison to work with Ms. Bank Wilkins, and if we can just take this part of the discussion, and if we could summarize what the board has requested and its areas of interest, and if we could then transfer that to Dr. Weldy so that he can prepare a revised presentation for the November meeting of Academic Affairs, if that is the will of the chair. I think we talked earlier. Okay, so then at least you'll have some very clear idea of what it is the board's looking to talk about. Thank you for that. I'm going to let President Baker move to the next item. Oh, yes.
State your point, sir.
In terms of our remaining agenda items, is it all informational items?
There are only two information items remaining. One is Dr. Baker's and one is mine.
And my understanding is that most of the board members have a 3:00 ceremony
we do.
That we need to attend as well.
We do.
Ribbon cutting's actually at 3:30, so we could probably go a little bit if you want to get into the IT report.
My concern is I don't want to shortchange any of the other informational topics as well. Now, if we think we can cover those two items over the next 20 minutes or so, then that's great. If not, I like to propose that we we table these two items, or, you know, I'm not sure, Chair, what informational item you may have, but I suspect when we get into the information technology topic that it will consume what little time we have left, and I don't want to shortchange that either.
Okay. How would we like to handle that, trustees? What we can do is we can move this discussion to one of the November committees, in which case I would recommend finance and facilities.
As long as we don't have an action item pending out of this, right?
No. Okay. And then would that work for you?
Yep, it would work for me.
I'm happy to pick that up. It's okay with
Trustee. That's all right.
Marshall.
Yes.
So I was just thinking that even if we went to 3:20, it still gives us 10 minutes to walk a few feet.
Sure. It's more likely, I'm fairly confident that we won't need much time for my report. If we do, we can extend it and talk more about it later. But we can postpone information item 10C3, move it into finance and facilities in November, if that's okay with you, Trustee Coleman.
Yes, it is.
All right. Then let's move then, if we can, immediately to the chair's report. I'm very pleased to provide an update on the ad hoc committee. I've sent the trustees the document that I'm now passing out to you.
Did you vote on collective bargaining?
Yes, we did.
Okay.
We don't need to have a substantive discussion of this item, but I do want to give the board an opportunity to comment or ask me any questions that they may have about this information item. What I wanted to point out was that
a collective bargaining issue. Under the president's report.
Oh, it was.
It was.
Absolutely.
Okay,
yeah.
I thought so.
Yeah, we had no discussion.
Great.
Yeah. Okay. All I simply want to point out is I endeavored to take some care with this item so that because it was the board's first ad hoc committee, that there was a process put in place of some kind. Ad hoc committees need to be appropriately limited in terms of time and scope. And so I spent a good deal of time working with the provost, with the vice president of research, and with the person who I had asked to chair this ad hoc committee, Trustee Sherilyn Muir, to specify what this ad hoc committee on sponsored research activity and technology transfer would entail. And so you have before you a memorandum and a set of key parameters and objectives. And I'm open to any questions that you have as a board.
Make a comment, if that's all right. I feel very privileged to chair this committee because I have always felt very strongly about research activities and the focus on research activities. And I think that part of the discussions that we've heard this morning, especially in light of the discussion with Dean Vora, with Mike Malone, that the interface with the foundation, the interface with the various colleges are all critical and really are at the basis of continuing to grow in the area of research. We're also at the cusp right now where we're seeing a lot of changes in research grants to the agencies. And I think that that's a dynamic change which gives us a lot of opportunity from a federal standpoint. So I think that this timing is very ripe, John. I think that it's very appropriate. And I think we are sending a message that research, that we are a research university, and that research is a priority. And I think also as we looked at the performance standards and how we're going to be financially rewarded, with 28% going to research I think it was research and something, research and outreach or something. That really, to me, just confirmed that we are certainly moving in the right direction with this committee.
Great, thank you very much. The person that the president has selected to be the liaison to this committee is Lisa Freeman, and she is in the back, who's just returned. Lisa, is there anything you'd like to add about this ad hoc committee at this time?
Just that I really look forward to working with Trustee Muir, who will be chairing the committee, and the other trustees, so that we can work with the president to really advance the research and technology transfer agenda of the university. I see it as a great opportunity and I'm really excited.
Great, thank you very much. Are there any other comments or questions in regard to this action item? I did want to formally bring this back to the board. I thought that was important to do, and I hope that we've put in place a process of some kind if in the future other board chairs wish to create ad hoc committees, that it function in a similar manner. So I am now prepared to talk about other matters. I know that we have to move, but I do want to say thank you and express on behalf of the board our gratitude to the many people who work to make this meeting possible. And I think it's worth pointing them out specifically: our recording secretary, Sharon Bank Wilkins, our board liaison, Bill Nicholas, the president and his cabinet and their staffs, who I mentioned in a large group of people. I'm sorry for not being more specific. Media services personnel who work very hard behind the scenes to make this meeting possible. The food service personnel who fed us earlier. Special thanks to Carolinda Douglas, the Vice Provost for Academic Planning and Development, for her reporting on the Higher Learning Commission, Vice President Kathy Bittner, Vice President Steve Cunningham for reporting on state and federal relations, Vice President Eric Weldy for his report on enrollment, and we are indeed grateful for your time and your energy and your preparation. We are now moving immediately as a board. Hopefully you can all join us to the ribbon cutting ceremony at the newly remodeled Gilbert Hall. Are there any other matters to come before this board? Seeing none, the next regular meeting of this board is December 5th, 2013. Is there a motion to adjourn the meeting?
Second.
The motion to adjourn has been made by Trustee Muir and seconded by Trustee Strauss. There is no discussion, I assume. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Seeing none, the meeting's adjourned.